Hello and welcome to the Movies You Forgot podcast with me, your host, Adam Richmond, and joining me as ever is the old leaky bucket boy, Joe Devine.
Hey yo, leaky bucket boy. I like it.
This is the show in which we chew over movies we forgot we'd even seen in the first place. On today's episode, we are talking about the 2010 flick, The American, directed by Anton Corbijn, written by Rowan Joffe.
You said starring, the J there a little bit, didn't you? You let the J in.
I can't. I'm going to let the J in. Yeah. It's, of course, starring George Clooney, and it's adapted from a novel called A Very Private Gentleman. And here is your Letterboxd. It's 104 mins, not too shabby. I love that runtime.
Yeah.
Dispatched to a small Italian town to await further orders, assassin Jack embarks on a double life that may be more relaxing than is good for him. Now that makes it seem like a quite a light-hearted little romp.
It does.
It ain't. So 2010, man, you're going to be quite the whippersnapper.
I was 20 years old.
Did you see this in the cinema?
I did not see this in the cinema, no. I watched this in the same week that I watched Syriana and Michael Clayton, and it was cool. I remember Michael Clayton the most. I remember this one the least.
Fantastic. Well, obviously I saw this at the cinema.
Obviously.
Needless to say.
Have you read the book?
I've not read
it. You would have already told me if you'd read the book. That's how I know you haven't.
And I would have said, where is it? It's in my house. I was trying to track it down. I did do a little bit of research to see what was what about the book and how it stands up against the film. From what I read about the book, it sounds like they're quite a lot different. Also, in the book, I think he is just a gun maker,
right.
Whereas in The American, he's not just a gun maker, he's a fucking all-round badass assassin.
That's the other thing I was a bit confused about. They call him an assassin in all the blurbs and stuff, but, I mean, and he does kill people, but also he appears to be mainly a gun maker.
Don't start unpicking this film.
Okay, my bad.
Because I really, really liked it. I've been listening back to a number of episodes because we're doing it. We're on a big push to edit old recordings,
yes.
Get them up in the feed. And all I've got to say is, yeah, this is rubbish and this is shit. And it's all like negative, negative. I sound like it's so oppressive.
I've never thought that about you.
This film was a nice, cool, refreshing glass of lemonade on a hot summer's European evening.
Of Lemon Clooney.
I really enjoyed rewatching this. It was a couple of days ago now, and I've already started to forget everything about it. But it was fantastic to watch this again. I thought, I can't believe I forgot this.
Okay, can I just say one thing about it that I thought that I laughed out loud at, and then I won't unpick it any further. Now, this is funny to me because I've been watching some films with my wife recently, and we've been talking about film tropes. And one of our favourite film tropes is when the title of the film is said in the film in a kind of, you know, in a sort of moment.
It's a good bit.
They do that in this film. Did you notice that? But they do it through a sort of joke of translation. And there's a moment where he, you know, an Italian man asks him, are you American? And he says, sì, il americano. And which obviously in Italian means the American. And the Italian man laughs and says, no, you're an American.
You know? Yeah, you see, right. So that's, you see, you laughed at that.
I laughed at that, yeah.
But that's good writing.
No, I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying I laughed that it took me out of the film a little bit because I thought, well, you've really sort of tried to squeeze that one in there.
They haven't, actually. They haven't tried to squeeze it in there.
No?
No, and that's just...
But he speaks perfect Italian for the rest of the film. It doesn't make any sense.
He doesn't speak perfect Italian. On poco.
Oh, hello.
He...
Who's this? Senor has joined the chat.
So there's a scene where he's sitting in one of those like dingy little cafes and it's got the El Americano, 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 the song that Jude Law sings in The Talented Mr. Ripley.
Yes, yes.
And if you're in the right mind space, you're not going, that's the song called The American in a film called The American. You know, I'm in the right mind vibe space and I'm thinking the shot on his face and yes. how quiet the music is playing. There's irony and contrast there. It's not... This is a European film, my friend.
Yes, it is.
And it's too clever for you, and you can only laugh at it.
This is not fair, because whenever I try to get you to watch European films, you go, oh, I'm Joe, I've watched a European film in the cinema. Oh, fuck off, I'm done with that. I did it all in my 20s. That's what you say.
Yeah, no, you're right. You've got me banged to rights, because I was just thinking about this. This film has got... It's got all these wonderful European sensibilities, and yeah. as opposed to Hollywood sensibilities. There is barely any traditional, obvious exposition in this film that you would get in a Hollywood film.
Not much.
Not much. You've got a lead character who doesn't speak for a lot of the film. Mm-hmm. It's a very internal film. You know, you're basically looking at Clooney's face and you are... projecting and imagining what he feels and what he's thinking about. There's a lovely European attitude to nudity and sex.
Sure.
And the violence is kind of short, sharp, but not kind of glorified.
No, it's very European, the violence.
It gives you this feeling of European cinema, but at the same time, it makes it go down in such a smooth Hollywood way.
Well, because there's a fucking massive movie star in the middle of it.
Yeah, that really helps, but we'll get on to Clooney, but it's not boring like a European film. It pertains to being philosophical and thoughtful, but it's all wrapped up in a lovely genre film. It's a guy, it's an assassin, he's building a gun, he's doing things, so it's both contemplative. But then at the same time, it's so gorgeous to look at.
It is gorgeous to look at. And also, you mentioned already the contemplative nature of the craftsmanship around the building of his weapon. You know, there's something very TikTok about that. There's a lot of ASMR in the way that he builds the gun, and the precision and the sort of meticulous nature with which he crafts this thing. And it made, when I was watching those scenes, I was thinking, it's like a fucking TikTok video when I'm watching, you know, things that are deliberately ASMR emphasized.
But what's that got to do? This predates TikTok. What's that got to do with anything?
No, I'm just saying it's cool. I'm just saying it's like, it's the same sort of feeling. It's that those scenes in particular, when he's pawning over this gun that he's building, they're very cool. That's all I'm saying. They're very relaxing to watch. They're very entertaining. There's something attractive about watching him, craft that. That's all I'm saying.
There's something very cinematic about watching someone do something, fixing a car. In this case, he's building a gun. That's the job he's got given. His cover's been blown at the beginning of the film. The beginning of the film had completely forgotten pretty much everything about this film, and then I started watching it, and the opening, it had me. The opening is fantastic. Something happens in it, and I thought you'd already seen half of it, so I probably spoiled the kicker, but like, it opens and it immediately establishes who the character is. It's totally surprising. It happens within the first 10 minutes, and as a result of what happens, it buys the film about 50 minutes of total patience and not having to do anything because of that opening. I fucking loved it. Then he goes to this little Italian town and he's going to build a gun. There are all these opportunities for pure cinema. You're not being told anything. You've got the promise of drama and action because he's saying, oh, the Swedes know about me. So the film is perfect because it's teasing you for like, well, don't worry. Yeah, I know he's just sitting on a bench building a gun, which also looks cool, and I know he's just wandering around Italy, but something else is brewing. Someone's after him.
Yeah.
And it's this perfect little European Hollywood package.
Yeah.
And not every single shot, but I would say about 80% of the shots in this film you could freeze frame and you could put up on your wall.
I don't disagree with the things that you're saying, and I think it looked tremendous, and I understand why it's a well-made film. The issue here for me is that the film revolves around Clooney, right? Not the character, but Clooney. He is such a massive movie star that he can't not be the central revolver for the, you know, the eyes of the viewer. And when I'm watching it, I'm assuming, well, this must be his project to do something like this. He must have decided he wanted to try a film like this. He must be doing something with his career. I wonder what he's thinking about this specific choice. Why, you know, I'm thinking about why he's taken the role. And the issue with that is that it changes the context in which I'm viewing the film. It's the same whenever I see Leonardo DiCaprio in a role, right? Leonardo DiCaprio is such a massive movie star that I think it's kind of impossible for him, unless the role is perfect, to disappear into the character. And Clooney's not quite like that, but because of his movie stardom, he can't not bring that to the screen with him. And I think if this film had a different actor in, I think I would have been able to enjoy it more. And that's not their fault, but that's what happened to me.
Yeah, no, I know it's your fault. It's definitely your fault. Because also, you're horribly wrong. Thing is, I haven't watched a Clooney film in ages.
Right. Yeah.
So this is me coming back to Clooney, and this is again. For me. It's refreshing. I was there, man.
Yeah,
when ER. No, I was there when ER came on telly.
You were in the ER.
I was at home. Right. I was 13.
1994. What? How old are you?
42.
No. How old are you in 1994?
13.
Oh, 13, okay.
I'm in the house. I see the trailer, the trailer for Channel 4. Like, there's this, it was, the whole thing was sold on, produced by Steven Spielberg and Michael Crichton, a new TV show, ER. And I was like, this looks fucking amazing. And guess what? It was fucking amazing. People forget how amazing ER was. It was, and Clooney, oh my God. Just that's it. Like I was his
Papa paid the bill.
He had the temerity to leave. He'd obviously been in shit films before. But that, I'm not going to talk about anything pre ER. But Clooney's my, I'm in Clooney. I'm paid up fanboy of Clooney from ER onwards.
And then
seeing him like Dusk Till Dawn. You're just, this is a guy who just, he wants to do interesting, fun stuff. That he fucks it with Batman and Robin. But you look at his filmography, he is always, it's fucking, it's not pristine, but it's close to one of the strongest filmographies I've ever seen.
You think so?
Yeah. Do you want me to, are we going to do it now?
Because no, I'll just. You do it. Do it for me.
Post ER. You know, we've got Dusk Till Dawn, One Fine Day. Not seen that, but Batman and Robin, of course. These are the early ones. Everyone's saying he's going to be a big star, and he's in a couple of Peacemaker. That was a middling action movie. Okay, then this is where we hit Out of Sight. Amazing. Thin Red Line. He appears at the very end. Three Kings. Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
Coens. That's where Three Kings and Oh Brother just really start to like peg him as this is someone who can. I don't know, there's no one like him. Perfect sure. Storm, stupid action film. Ocean's 11.
Hey, you missed out Spy Kids. Come on.
I'm doing what I've written down. I've obviously missed out some shit. Ocean's 11. Solaris, Soderbergh, smart sci-fi, and then he's at Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, Intolerable Cruelty, which is pretty decent. Ocean's 12, Back to the Well. Then he directs Good Night, Good Luck. Syriana, The Good German, I've not seen. Ocean's 13, Diminishing Returns. Michael Clayton, very good. Leatherheads, again, he directed that. That's not very good. Burn After Reading, a middling to poor. Coens, Up in the Air. Fantastic Mr. Fox. Mm-hmm. The Men Who Stare at Goats, never seen. The American, Boom. The Descendants, Ides of March. Monuments Men, never seen. He directed that as well. It didn't get very well reviewed.
Oh, you missed Gravity.
No. Oh, exactly. Then we're on. Yeah, I've got some of that at them out of order. Gravity, which is huge, although he's not in it that much. Tomorrowland, which was a bit of a failure. Money Monster. This is where we're on the slide now. Ever since Gravity, Money Monster, directed by Jodie Foster, no one likes. He's in Catch 22 and helped.
He's terrific in Hail Caesar, by the way, which you may have missed off your list.
Oh yeah, because I felt he was so small. I forget he was in that. Okay,
he's so good in that. He's really funny in that. Also, he's playing quite an un-Clooney-like character in that film, and he's great.
I've totally forgotten about that. And then I've got, he directs and is stars in Midnight Sky, which I wanted to watch before this episode. And then most recently, he was in Ticket to Paradise with Julia Roberts. So he has gone off the boil, but he's done three Coen brothers, an Alexander Payne, a couple of Soderberghs, a Terry Malick, Tony Gilroy. Most of those films, I've said... Well, not most. A lot of them are 8 out of 10s.
Yeah.
And there's a couple of fucking 10 out of 10s. Out of Sight, Three Kings, Oh Brother, Clayton's an 8. Up in the Air's fucking great. Fantastic Mr. Fox is a 10. You know, that filmography is solid as a bloody rock.
Sure. Sure. Hey.
What do you mean?
No, I'm saying, yeah, I agree with you. It's George Clooney. Listen, I think the takeaway point here is that there are relatively few misses. You know, when we did this a few weeks ago, when we talked about old Jack Nick, many misses. And given the caliber of his stardom, you would think, well, he must have been in so many wonderful films. The reality is you look through them and there's, you know, more misses than hits. Whereas with Clooney... I think you're right. Maybe his best skill is in choosing the film.
But that's the whole ball game. The fact that his, you know, the smarts, and also...
Well, what is it about him, though? What is it about him that makes him so desirable to the audience?
He is absolutely gorgeous. He's not just a female fantasy figure. He's a male fantasy figure. I was watching The American, and I was thinking, I want to be you. He's a bloody dreamboat.
He is.
He's a dreamboat. But also, he's just a very chilly, removed guy.
Sure.
Which also plays into this kind of strong, silent type fantasy.
He's economical with his words. We could say that.
But what I was going to say, like, you gave your reason as to why he's attractive in this film. I was speaking, when I asked you to do that homework, I was more speaking for you to do that, him as, like, spanning all his roles.
Oh, as him?
Him as him.
Oh.
So because I think...
in the eyes.
Yeah. So, like, you go, you know, go back before Clooney, I would think, you know, a character, an actor... you know, men want to be and women want to be with, reductively. So you go back and you've got Cary Grant, John Wayne, Sean Connery, like James Bonds are always...
Harrison Ford.
Yeah, you see, that's the thing. I don't think Harrison Ford ever had the threat of sex behind him to make him push him over the line. I'm not saying you're wrong. No, I don't think so. He's too...
PG?
Yeah, he's too PG-13. Yeah.
Okay. What about Richard Gere?
He's too pretty. Women want him. I don't think men want to be him.
No, that's do you know, I've only written down one name here. And I wrote down, and it's a character, but I think he applies generally. Clive Owen, but specifically Clive Owen in Children of Men.
Yeah, you see, the problem with Clive Owen is he's not big enough. I'm talking about a cultural...
Because it has to be everyone.
It has not, obviously not everyone,
dead centre of the canon of this question.
Yeah, we're talking canon. Right. So Clooney obviously was, but he's no more because he's old and people hate old people.
Yes.
And he's kind of off the boil. I was asking some people who they thought a modern version of.
Timothy Chalamet.
You see, he's not, no man wants to be Timothy Chalamet.
I think no man over the age of 27 wants to be Timothy Chalamet, but I think every man under the age of 27
right,
wants
but
to
that's
be Timothy
that Chalamet. doesn't count. I think, like, say for example, you'd be closer with Ryan Gosling, for example.
Did children want to be George Clooney?
Yes, I just told you.
Did 80-year-olds want to be George Clooney?
No, we're not including 80-year-olds. As discussed,
count.
They don't count.
How old are we going?
Listen, look, the whole question's fucking stupid.
Right. But that's why I think Chalamet's in for a real shout as the modern day version of
him.
I agree with you that people of a previous generation aren't interested in that. But.
No. Because I think of masculinity is still sadly like predominant, and he's not got the masculinity to span that like part of the demographic I'm talking about. I'd love to be Chalamet. Let's get that on the record.
Yeah.
He's a very attractive. Actually, he's kind of gross. Ever since I've rewatched him in Lady Bird, he's a little snarky little. But the fact that.
He popped up in. I've been watching Homeland recently, and he popped up in that very young.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I just don't. He's not to everyone's taste.
What you're saying is he's not masculine enough for you.
No, he's not masculine enough for. He's masculine enough for me I'm fine. Yeah, but I'm not. We're not going to have any of that.
No.
He's not masculine enough for. There's a lot of. If he was, then we would have solved toxic masculinity, but we haven't because it's still prevalent as fuck.
I agree.
So I'm you want the whole point is you're talking about a safe space figure that spans time and appeals to
so
everyone.
Who is it then? Who's the modern day one?
The closest is Ryan Gosling. That's what Gosses. I got.
Yeah, I guess so.
And even him, so. I think he's less
masculine than Clooney.
But yeah, he's more masculine than Chalamet.
Yeah.
I don't even know why I raised the question.
He's Ken, isn't he? He's literally Ken.
But he's not. I mean, he's in the film, the new film, he's Ken, but he's obviously more than that. So when you watch, when I watch him in Blade Runner or The Nice Guys, he's this kind of funny schlub. And then if you watch him in Crazy Sexy Love, he's this, he's that horrible, oily, sexy prick. That's you watch him in Drive, and you think, "Yes, I want to smash someone's face with a hammer as well."
That's true. Yeah, he does. He does stamp on someone's face.
You know, he has the burning masculine rage.
He's got the quiet fury down. Yeah,
and then he'll look all dewy eyed.
Place between the pines. He only looked like 15% like he was in the film Grease when he was making that.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think. He's on the edge of when he plays a tough guy, he looks like he's doing it in a Broadway musical.
He's got
a glittery jacket in Drive. You know, there's something and it works for him. Like the Quiet Fury thing works really well. But in that film A Place Between the Pines, when he plays that kind of biker guy, street guy, I just don't like he's too pretty for me to believe him in those roles. It's a bit like, you know, hark back to it again, but whenever you ask Leo to play anything which isn't a pretty spoiled dickhead, doesn't quite work.
But I mean, Drive, the film that broke Gosling, I'd say properly. Yeah. But not just that. Like before that, you've not seen it, The Believer, where he played an anti-Semitic skinhead. He came out. He broke through. I mean, before that, he was a Disney kid. So then he had to go hard right, literally. So he's got menace and violence in his locker.
Yeah. What about Ryan Reynolds?
He's just too funny. I think if you see someone who's funny, you think immediately you go, well, I'm funnier than that guy. What are you saying? Ryan Reynolds is funny. Yeah. Well, I've got some jokes.
What about Chris Evans? A bit too milquetoast.
Sometimes you find the nail with your hammer and you absolutely found it there. Yeah. He's too nice. Not always, but yeah, he's.
What about Robert Downey? But 15 years ago, 10 years ago.
No, but we're talking about now. But he was never. I don't think he was ever a figure of fantasy sex wise.
No.
For anyone.
Okay. For anyone. You don't think anyone ever fantasized about having sex with him?
I'd say Michael B. Jordan is probably pretty much up there.
Do you think anyone's ever fantasized about having sex with you that hasn't had sex with you?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
No, yeah, I don't think that either.
If I was, I would be thinking about that right now and we wouldn't be on a podcast. I'd just be thinking about that in a little quiet room. I'd either be at work.
You'd be fantasizing about someone fantasizing about having sex with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. I'd be like, where's Adam? Is he at work? No. Is it cinema? No. Where is it? Oh, he's in that little room he's got where he's thinking about someone. He's in his little room. He's thinking about it. It turns out it's true. And boy, is he thinking about it. I don't think we'll see him for days.
Yeah. Oh, well, never mind, eh?
Tell me about tone. Before we get into the box office game, tell me about tone. You seem to have some issue about the tone of the movie.
Yeah.
I thought the tone was pretty clean and consistent. I was never jarred from it. Now, so aside from your Clooney issue, we've logged that, fair enough. Visually, the film is cohesive and striking. Mm-hmm. The story is simple. My only issue with the film is it basically ends far too... It wraps up far too quickly. Mm. You're like, what? And then it ends. But, like, tone-wise, he's either wandering around talking to a priest or he's building a gun and it's building up tension.
That's right, though. The tone is tension.
Someone slams a book closed and you think it's a gunshot.
Yes.
You know, they do the little cheats to make you think something's happened that haven't happened.
Well, the true crescendo of the tension is, of course, when he realises he's been shot, he's in a car, and he hits the steering wheel in anger. It's the only time you ever see him lose his temper. And it's very small. Yeah.
A lovely moment. Yeah. He's like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
What?
Typical.
Typical.
Yeah.
But what's your beef with the tone?
I don't have a beef with the tone. I feel like the tone is telling me that it's a different film than the one I'm watching, and that's just subjective, and that doesn't mean that it's wrong.
I'd love to climb inside your little brain.
Okay, so the music is part of it. I hate to go back to it, but the music is part of it.
Okay, skip the music. Fair enough. I get that. Okay, so the music, you're right. Okay, and you're so musically minded. No, you are. But then what else?
Then it's the pacing of it, I think.
Okay.
There's something about the pacing of it which dissatisfies me a little bit. There are... I don't always love when there are indecipherable jumps in terms of amounts of time between things.
Okay.
I don't always like when... I think there's a lot to do with colour grading as well. Like, you're right, when he's walking around the outside of this little town, he always thinks he's being followed. There are all these different little hues. And as you said earlier, you could pause this film at any point and there's a piece of art for you. But I think the issue with it for me is that all of that work is done towards building tension, right? And in this film, the tone is about the tension. And I like films that are just a bit more relaxing, you know. It's something I watched Oppenheimer recently, and an issue I had with it was that there are no scenes within the film where you're just in that scene, right? You're constantly moving through, and that's fine. It's a stylistic choice. It is purposeful and it's intentional. But I like to just feel rooted in something for a moment to allow me to orient myself, and then to allow the tone of the film to just kind of seep into me. And sometimes I feel as though the pacing interrupts that.
That I think that sums up my... I didn't say it in the future or in the past because we've already had that conversation.
Sure.
That, I think, is the why I never connected into Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Is because it's a ticking time bomb.
You have to just go with it. You can't. It never allows you to pause for breath or anything, yeah. I think the only other thing I would say is that... I really like George Clooney. I think he's great, but I don't want to be him. He isn't part of my desirable tone palace situation.
Who do you want to be?
I have going on. Who do I want to be? The thing is, man, I'm so happy as myself.
Oh, yeah, sure. Seriously, who do you want to be?
Aragon. I want to be Aragon.
Okay. You want to be Aragon?
I want to be Viggo Mortensen. I want someone, I want to be real, you know, sincere and sort of... husky. Viggo Mortensen, as Aragon, maybe we could agree that he's somebody that everyone would want to be or have sex with.
But he's too... The problem with him is he's too good. He's going to stick with one person.
Right.
I want someone with a little twinkle in their eye.
That's right.
Someone who could stray. Someone, a bad boy.
You want Aragon, someone who you can't trust will stay with you. Yes.
I want to be this pure guy who's so good and only that, like, he only speaks to the only one woman in the whole series.
Eowyn.
And that's...
Is it Eowyn? No, I don't think it is Eowyn. Oh, shit.
Kate Blanchett. It's like, oh, I've met one woman and that's it.
It's not Kate Blanchett, mate. It's Liv Tyler.
Oh, fair play. That's how little I care about those films.
Oh, man, you have to watch them again.
Make me.
I will. Can we do it together? And then Gladiator, a quadruple bill.
Well, what do I get out of it?
I don't know. I'll watch four films that you want me to watch. No, I tell you what, I'll watch eight films that you want me to watch. But we have to watch them together.
Yeah, and they might be horror-based.
Okay. I can deal with it as long as you approach Lord of the Rings and Gladiator with an open mind.
Of course I will. I saw Lord of the Rings at the cinema, mate, before you were born. I saw Gladiator at the cinema before you were born. But listen, you watched these films when you were basically a child.
Yes.
And the reason why you love them is because you were a child.
It's possible.
And all the affinity you have for them is because you were a child.
Yes, that's also possible.
I've aged and now I'm even older. I'm not saying I do want to rewatch them.
I tell you what, if you do rewatch them, we can play a little game. And the game will be, in the first film, there is one transition between scenes which doesn't work. And everything else is smooth as the smoothest object. Yeah?
Yeah, let's play the box office game.
Okay, it's time for the box office game. Now, remember, we're talking about the film The American. That's
right. I know it's
right.
Hard. It's hard to remember that, like 2 hours in.
Of course, it released on September the 5th, 2010. Now, what do you recommend? Recommend? What do you reckon? Estimated budget on IMDb for The American, Adam.
This is a tough one. We've all always discussed when it comes to these smaller films, what is the bloody budget? Like, you've got a big old star.
Yeah. And Pappy just done Joy Division beforehand, right? So I don't know if we made that clear or not, but Anton Corbijn directed Control.
We didn't mention it because we know that our avid listenership.
They know.
Know.
Yeah.
I didn't really like Control, so that's why I didn't talk about it.
Oh, I liked it.
And I didn't really like A Most Wanted Man either. I thought that was a bit disappointing.
Don't think I watched that one.
Anyway, this is a passion project.
Yes.
Oh, but also, this isn't. He's making it because he's making it for love.
Yeah.
And so they're making it on a budget because they know it's not going to make necessarily. It's a bit of a bet. So I'm going to say it cost $20 million to make.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. It cost $20 million to make. I got you because I pretended that you were wrong with my initial
reaction. Why are you
doing
the whole Joey thing on me? Like, it's good. It's like you do it every time. Yeah, that's what it's...
Do they do that in Friends?
Yeah, Joey does it in Friends.
Don't remember it. Right, okay.
So you're saying, basically what you're saying is, because I think sometimes it gets lost in your patter when I fucking nail it. Yeah.
Completely clear, extra clear, you get pissed off at me. But now that I haven't made it clear enough how good you are. I spent the first 8 episodes of this saying, God, you're good at this game, aren't you? And you were like, yeah, no, you know, it's just the whole history of watching films. You didn't seem to care at all. So I stopped praising you. And now you want a little bit more of it, don't you? You want me to tell you how good that is.
That's on the... Before also, like, you were going, oh, you've cheated, or like, you know, you added some sort of like
stink on it.
That's just
because of how good you are. I assumed you must have cheated, because how could someone be this good at this
game?
Right,
so that's, mate, that's what I wanted.
What's talk me through your thought process briefly. I mean, how do you get to 20? It's a round number for sure, right? So
it's
a round number.
It's
not 10. Obviously, it's more than 10, but it's not 30. Is that it? It's just, it's more than 10, but it's not 30. So I'm going to say 20. Is that it?
Basically, of course it is, because it looks good.
Yeah.
They've shot on location.
Yeah.
It's got a star.
Yeah.
You know, they want to spend some money.
It's more than 10.
They're not going to spend too much money, because what is this kind of film? They've looked at clearly how much money is it going to make.
Yeah.
We can afford to spend 20 on this.
Okay.
Let's spend 20 on it.
Now comes the fun.
This is it.
Opening weekend, US and Canada, Adam. September the 5th, remember, 2010. What do you think? It cost $20 million.
I would love to have rewatched the trailer for this. We didn't do the trailer.
I think it sells it a little bit as an action, more of an action film than it is, as you can imagine.
Yeah,
but
the
not in a significant way. But it is Clooney, and it's Clooney as an assassin. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but it's still obviously a European film. I don't think this is doing boffo.
Okay.
Opening weekend, I've got these so wrong sometimes.
Now, don't forget how good you are at this game. I wouldn't want you to feel not good at this game.
I'm good at budgets.
Okay.
Although I really shit the bed on Revolutionary Road.
That's true, you did.
I'd say, let's say, opening weekend.
Yeah.
$7 million.
Now, let me tell you, Adam Richmond. Opening weekend, US and Canada, $13 million. $177,790. I mean, that's relative boffo.
That's very boffo for a film on a budget of 20.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah,
come
yeah,
on.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Okay. Come well, it brings on. Us then, of course, to Gross Worldwide.
Oh, Gross Worldwide.
I mean, is it washing its face? Is the first question.
Oh, it's absolutely Pears soap scrubbing the face.
Yeah.
It's Pears? All the way down.
Scrubbing your face with Pears.
This is this is exactly what you said last time.
Is it?
My mate, yeah. And then I said, oh, and then I kind of went back on it and he went, oh, no, Pears, that's my favourite bit.
Right, okay.
So I've just re-listened to that and that's why I added back
oh,
in
it's
Pears.
Oh, the joke that keeps on giving, I've forgotten. Is that a shower gel brand or something?
It's a kind of a bar of soap. It's like an old, it's old people's soap.
It's a kind of bar of soap, okay. Made from a pear. Okay. Sounds good. What do you think, mate? Gross Worldwide.
I've lost confidence in it again. So, yeah, forget it.
No, I like it.
Well, Clooney transcends territories.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this film's opening every which way but loose. So it costs 20. I think it was very solidly reviewed. It's so bloody watchable. Could it possibly have made double its money? The marketing budget, we won't even get into that.
It did 68 million.
Oh, yes.
I mean, he's good for it, man. He's good for it.
He really is.
Yeah. Well done.
And they're spending,
well,
you know, they're spending, you know, a percentage of how much the budget was on marketing it.
Do you know what's interesting? I was just having a quick look out of interest at the Michael
Clayton.
Well,
whilst I was talking.
That's right. Yeah. So sorry.
Great.
But I heard by your tone that you'd finished talking. Now, I was having a quick look at the box office for Michael Clayton, a, you know, kind of comparable film in a sense.
Not really, but you know, continue.
Similar budget, 25. Opening weekend, only $700,000, which, I mean, good Lord, so much less. But overall, it did nearly 100 million. It did $93 million.
But do you know why?
Why is that?
Because of the Oscars.
Because of the Oscars. Because it did well at the Oscars.
Because that film was going to disappear. It's called Michael Clayton.
Yes.
It was going to be considered a real, like, forget about this.
It's so good, man. I love that film.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
It's the power of the Oscars. Now's the time on the podcast where one of us reads out a list of films that hopefully to catch out the other person that they forgot.
Yes.
Last week, Joe caught me out with The American. I let him catch me out.
Sure.
And now it's time for my list. Tag.
No.
Safety Not Guaranteed.
What's that?
It's got one of the Duplasses in and Aubrey Plaza. It's the Colin Trevorrow's first film, who went on to direct Jurassic World.
I don't think I've seen it.
Child 44.
Haven't seen that.
The Great Outdoors.
No.
Young Guns.
No.
The Business.
that's when Danny Dyer washes his willy in the sink. No, I haven't forgotten that, no.
Control.
Oh, what? The other Anton film.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love to do that, but no, I actually really like that film, and also we talked about it a lot today.
American Hustle?
I haven't forgotten that because I hated that film.
Fair enough. The Bourne Legacy.
The Bourne... Which one's that?
It's the Renner one. It's
the one with Jeremy Renner!
Yeah, the non...
Shit. For a moment there, I was going to laugh in your face and tell you to get out of my face and fuck off because I thought you were trying to get me on a Bourne film. But I need to find a mirror and tell myself to fuck off because I had forgotten about that film.
So that was today's episode. That was The American. Goodbye.
Goodbye.